Hello and welcome to The Tips, a new weekly podcast from the DP World Tour. This week, we are previewing the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mixed in Stockholm and the RBC Canadian Open in Toronto. As ever, we have the help of some expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. This week, it's a pleasure to welcome back Ben Coley from Sporting Life. Alongside Ben, we have the Lost for Words podcast host, Tom Jacobs. And very importantly, making her debut on The Tips for the first time is DP World Tour commentator and former Ladies European Tour player, Incy Mehmet. Welcome, Incy.
Thanks, Ollie. No, it's been quite a whirlwind, to be honest. Just got back from Germany from the Porsche European Open. It was an incredible week. The weather was awesome. And funnily enough, I was told that the weather was quite good at home back in the UK. And I come back yesterday, it was freezing cold. And apparently today's going to be one of the hottest days and I'm off to Sweden. So no, it's been a bit of a whirlwind. Our flight got cancelled on Sunday, about 4 hours sleep. But here we are, the pleasure of your company.
Lovely. Well, we're very glad to have you. I'm not sure how much sympathy you're going to get for jumping on planes to lovely places around Europe, but that is all good. Speaking of, you're traveling a hell of a lot at the moment, all around the tour. Are there any sort of, one personal highlight at all, and also just on the course highlights so far that really stand out this season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my favourite event this year, I'm probably a little bit biased here, is probably the Genesis Korean Open. I'm half Korean, and going back to your kind of motherland is always going to be special. But the best part of all of that is actually the food. And we went to the Jack Nicklaus Golf Club. Pablo Larrazabal won in some fine form as well. I mean, the final day was out of this world. It was so tough. It was windy. It was cold. And I think that really brings out the best in Pablo. He's definitely a finesse player, loves to kind of control his trajectory. And it was quite incredible to watch, and definitely a proud moment for me to have a DP World Tour event on motherland soil and catch up with family afterwards and put on 5 kilos afterwards.
How good. Yeah, that was a special event. And if Pablo Larrazabal is a bit of an old hand on tour, then maybe we saw the makings of a new star last week. Recapping the Porsche European Open, it was Tom McKibben who got the job done, holding off the German duo of Max Kiefer and Marcel Siem. Incy, what can you tell us about the lesser-known golfer from Hollywood?
I've only recently got to know him, and he's an incredibly chilled guy. I mean, after watching him pull off that second shot into 18, I mean, first of all, what a shot out of the first cut of rough. He had a 5-iron in hand, and he's so mature for his age. You know, I think 6-iron was the club to take on this par 5 and 2, but he purposefully clubbed up to 5-iron just to ensure that he makes the carry of the water short left. It's an intimidating shot. You know, it was a high-pressure situation, and he pulled it off like you won't believe, drew it around the tree. And I can't believe how softly he managed to land that ball. He set himself up for an eagle opportunity and ended up tapping it in for a birdie. So it really was quite an amazing performance. And just seeing his dad's reaction, Rob, who travels with him everywhere he goes, was really special to be part of. And Johnny Morgan actually sprinted down the first green to grab one of those pins, because obviously it's got hole number one on it, and then you got the Porsche European Open on the other side. So what better way to finish off a day like that by stolen flag from Johnny Morgan, with number one representing your first DP World Tour win at the Porsche European Open. It was really, really quite cool.
That's awesome. No, it was absolutely sublime. He's got a big, big, big future. And he, just after that, we were seeing if Rory could do the Hollywood double at Memorial, which he couldn't quite do. But Victor Hovland got it done for Team Europe, if you will, just over Denny McCarthy. The putting god that is Denny McCarthy couldn't quite get it done at the end. And from our side, we had Dave Tindall, very unlucky. Adam Scott and Ricky Fowler both tied ninth, just missing out on each way for the podcast. But Martin Matthews, also known as Sundog Monkey, had Lee Hodges' top 20 winner for us, which was lovely to see. And Ben took the week off in Catalonia, working on the tan and just researching hard for the Scandi. But Tom, you got some points back as well with a little bit of a winner.
Yeah, each way returns on Siwoo Kim, which is, you know, a little bit of a shame. You kind of hope that he would get himself into contention after being right there after 54 holes. But poor start from him. I think it's 3 over through 4. And then he bounced back really well. He actually really got himself into the mix. And it wasn't until the back nine where he kind of got into trouble again, where he felt that there was probably chance over. But just on like Tom McKibben, just one point before we move on there, like that shot that he played, probably the shot that you can only play when you're a 20-year-old that hasn't won yet, I think, because, you know, it's sort of the things that people always talk about experience and winning, but I think sometimes an experienced pro probably wouldn't take that on, like Inzi referenced there. So I think just having the lack of scar tissue and just the bravery set on from a young age was really exciting to see. And with him and Victor Hovland winning, it's a bright start for Europe to the middle of the year.
Yeah, absolutely fearless. I think he's second in 16 as well. That was dry by a foot or so as well. It showed exactly that. Well, good stuff from last week all round. And now it's time to get stuck into this week's action, starting with the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mix at the stunning Alnö Golf and Country Club in Sweden. The Volvo Car Scandinavian Mix heads to Alnö Golf and Country Club just outside of Stockholm for another staging of its innovative mixed event. Co-sanctioned with the Ladies European Tour and hosted by 10-time major champion Annika Sörenström, the tournament was a first of its kind event when first staged in 2021. It sees 78 men and women compete on the same course for one prize fund and one trophy. Inzi, let's come to you first. This event has been a fantastic addition to the DP World Tour and LET schedule. And what a winner we had last time out with Lynn Grant, making history as the first female winner of a DP World Tour event, storming to a 9-shot win on home soil. What have you made of the event over the last few years? And how great is it having the support of such an icon like Annika?
It really is such an incredible event. I think it's kind of first of its kind back in 2021 when they first hosted that event. But I was there last year. I was doing the on-course commentating. I was following Lynn Grant's group. And I think the kind of key highlight for me was actually watching both Lynn Grant and Jason Scrivener, who was only 2 shots back, warming up, because it really felt as though the weight of women's golf was on Lynn Grant's shoulders. And just seeing her warm up, she seemed so composed. And so, yeah, just watching her play last year, and I think birdieing 3 out of the first 4 holes was just astonishing. You know, she played with Annika Sörenström in the first round last year, and she said that was the most stressful part of the week. So it just really shows how she kind of handles, I'm going to call it stress, because winning a golf tournament isn't easy. And to be the first woman to win a DP World Tour event is not only a huge honor, but an incredible accomplishment as well. So yeah, the atmosphere of the event is awesome. I think the women love teeing it up against the men love teeing it up against the women. And don't forget these ladies on the Ladies European Tour anyway. I mean, the average prize fund is maybe, it was 200,000, but now it's kind of 300,000. But this prize fund is 2 million. So it's a huge difference. The ladies have got so much to play for. And overall, it's a super fun week.
Love it. Obviously, it has moved. We are going over to Alnö Golf and Country Club as opposed to Halmstad, which always makes things interesting, Ben, when you're trying to do research into finding out some little nuggets of information. Have you, it's obviously got some history and some amazing winners back in the 80s, particularly in this event. Have you managed to work out what sort of player it may favour this week?
I don't know. I hope so. It's difficult from a purely betting perspective. It is difficult. So we've moved 3 different courses now for this event. I think it's a good thing for the event itself. And certainly the difference between the first course, which was more a links-like feel, to last year's more Parkland test was a nice change. And this is kind of another change again. There's loads of water in play. I've seen it described as the best 17-hole course in Sweden, which is a comment not to criticize one single hole that lets it down. It's to say that it's actually a really small piece of land and it's quite hard to fit a golf course on there. So in terms of the yardage, it's very, very short. Certainly for the men, to see a 6,800-yard course that's a par 72, I mean, that's about a kilometer short of Green Eagle last week. So it's a massive change. And from everything I've read, there's a lot of playing for position off the tee, a lot of irons, a lot of three woods. And that does change things. You look at the top of the betting here, you've got players like Bob McIntyre, who clearly could come here and win. But if you were to ask him, he'd probably prefer a course where he can get driver out as often as possible. You'd say the same about players like Niklas Norgaard, Marcus Helikilder, Antoine Rosner. And I thought quite a lot of the men's side of the draw would like that. And actually, if you go back to last year and Lynn Grant's incredible performance, it was on the back of that driver. I mean, she was basically 300 yards down the middle, you know, pretty much every hole, it felt like. So if that club is taken out of people's hands, it could work against her, and it could work against a few of the leading male players as well. So that was kind of my start point. But we have to hold our hands up and say there is some guesswork involved here, right? Because we simply haven't seen it. So we'll see how things go.
Yeah, there really is some guesswork. And from all the blogs and everything you consume, Tom Jacobs, is there any other sort of track on the circuit that you've tried to draw on?
No, so I kind of felt that it was, you look at places where there's going to be a lot of short irons and wedges when they can hit driver, then they are going to have those short approaches in. So I think places like Crans and things like that, although it's elevation, could be interesting. But also there was Sven Tumba, who designed the golf course. He actually designed a course that was used on the Challenge Tour in 2021-2022 for the Dormy Open. So one of my selections will lead into that a little bit. It's a bit of a tenuous link, and I was trying to find someone that had done well at the Dormy Open itself. But they weren't playing this week, a lot of them. So, yeah, I think it's typically, I could have picked one from there. But yeah, just another, you know, looking at ones, I don't think it'd be too dissimilar to maybe last year, but a sense it's going to be, like Ben said, shorter, and that opens things up a little bit as well. So I've certainly gone with the chance to take on some shorter hitters in the hope that actually they can capitalize on some strong iron and wedge play this week.
Good stuff. As mentioned, it has some history on the tour, Scandinavian Masters back in the day, and the real cream of the crop rose. I mean, Sam Torrance and Ian Woosnam, a couple of the winners in the 80s. Annika won in 2004. So looking at the top of the market this week, to go that, it's a lot of Sweden. Alex Norén and Lynn Grant, joint favourites of 14-1. And just behind them, compatriot Alex Bjork at 18-1, who obviously just is in good form, but needs to get four rounds put together, essentially. So let's get into these tips, starting with you, Ben. Who is your first outright selection for this week?
A bit dull, I'm afraid, but it's Alex Norén. I thought he was a really big price, and despite being favourite, if you go back a year, he was about a 10-1 shot for this event. For me, it was probably slightly better in terms of the field. Not much in it, but maybe slightly better. His form was worse. He'd missed the last two cuts. This time he's made his last two cuts. So it's a slightly better version of Norén, perhaps. No doubt it's been a difficult year for him. Obviously, he started really well in Abu Dhabi. Out on the PGA Tour, he has struggled. But if you look at what's happened when he's come back to the DP World Tour, where he's a big fish in a smaller pond, he's been exceptional. He could have won his last three events on the DP World Tour. He second to John Rahm in Dubai, second to Victor Perez at Yas Links, and second in the Dunhill Links and fifth at Yas Links. Dunhill Links obviously behind Ryan Fox. These are three massive events on the DP World Tour, and he could easily have won all three of them. He's essentially played really well every time he's come back to this circuit over the last 2 years. If you compare him to someone like Bjork, and no disrespect to Alex Bjork, who's a fabulous player, gets the most out of his game because he's obviously one of the shorter hitters on the circuit. Alex Norén has won, 10 DP World Tour titles. Bjork's won one. If you go on the events they've both played over the last sort of 2 years, Bjork has never beaten Norén. So to find them sort of the same price, I kind of thought that underestimated how good the PGA Tour is at the moment and how a player like Bjork would find it if he went out there, right? He would find it difficult, I think. So anyway, that's a roundabout way of saying I think Norén comes here having played pretty well lately at Colonial, top 30 finish there. He made the cut last week. A shorter course as well. If he doesn't have to hit driver, that's a massive advantage because he is not necessarily the best driver. If you look at his stats on the PGA Tour, he's in the bottom 10%. Everything else is brilliant. He's got, you know, a brilliant putter in the bag. His short game's really good, and his approach play at his best would be a strength. Tom mentioned Crans. You could throw in Wentworth, another tree line golf course that might be a good enough guide. And yeah, look, he's just a class act, and I thought he should be a shorter price than he is, probably about half the price that he opened up on Monday. So I was happy to get stuck in.
Absolutely. Yeah, as you say, looking at his stats on the PGA Tour, he is top 10 for all stroke gained around the greens, putting, everything. So if length isn't needed, which doesn't look like it is, he could be good. And I feel like we need a foghorn here. It's our biggest bet so far on the tips with 4 points each way for him. And at 14-1, you can get on Alex Noren at the top of the market, which is very big for a 10-time winner, you'd have to think. Tom, what about yourself? Where's your headline selection going?
Yeah, so for me, it's Joost Luijten, who we mentioned at the top of the show, Marcel Siem and Pablo Larrafabao, and I think he can kind of follow in those footsteps of a little bit of a renaissance, and he's certainly shown that this season with 3 third-place finishes already. He's had back-to-back top 22 finishes coming in back at home at the KLM, and then last week on the Porsche European Open. And last week, I kind of played Siwoo Kim off the strength of him playing well at Colonial, were ever playing well there before. And I just felt that the Luijten finishing inside the top 22 last week at a course that I don't think particularly plays to his strengths, being a slightly shorter hitter. I think that's actually a better performance than it's given credit for. Comes to an event where back in 2021, on the first renewal of this, he was actually second going into the weekend. Played really poorly over the weekend. There's no getting away from that. But he had a bit of a rough time during the COVID and things like that to try and get his game back in shape. And I think that's just an element of rust coming in, standing in contention. So I think now he's had a couple of chances this year already. I mentioned earlier that I'm going to be leaning into kind of shorter hitters. It's probably their best chance to win this season for Joost Luijten. I certainly feel like I don't think there's going to be a better golf course for him. So for me, that was mainly it. I think, you know, just at 30-1 for a player that we know has won 6 times on DP World Tour, has been third 3 times this season, and has watched the likes of Marcel Siem and Pablo Larrafabao win, and kind of, I guess you can say, inspired from that, I think, trying to keep up with these younger players. So for me, Joost Luijten, I'm going to give him a chance to get a win back on the card again.
Great stuff. Again, the same strength, isn't it, around the greens. Very good at. He's 2 weeks in a row, Dave Tindall's main pick last week. So he's 30-1 this week, and it was 2 points provided there each way from Tommy Jacobs. Inti, I won't ask you for a selection, but as a former player on the LET, I'm sure you know a fair few of these ladies pretty well. Who are the ones who really impressed you the most in your playing days? And can you give us a bit of insight into the in-form players heading into this event?
I think the first person that comes to mind is Olivia Cowan. She's only had one Ladies European Tour win, but to be honest, she's like your solid top 10 player. She's always up there. I mean, I think recently she played in Belgium and finished fourth. That was the same week as the KLM when I was interviewing Todd Clements, her boyfriend. And she just seems to always kind of linger at the top of the leaderboard. But yeah, you look at Anna Pali, I can't say her name, Anna Trevino, I'm going to skip out the middle name. You know, she is one of your most solid players as well. So I didn't play as much with Anna, but you look at how she's kind of done this season so far. She's second in the Race to Costa del Sol, and she's finished second 3 times this year. And apart from the one missed cut, her worst finish is in that kind of top 28th spot. So, you know, definitely a player in absolute form, but you can't miss out Lynn Grant, you know, the defending champion coming back and playing on home soil. I think she's the top seed in the women's game. It's an obvious pick, but, you know, I think Lynn Grant is such a super player. Kind of, if you look at every aspect of her game, she's one of the longer hitters. She's not the longest hitters, but, you know, although this isn't a particularly long golf course at all, I mean, for the women, it's just over 6,000 yards, which I would say is actually incredibly short. I would say standard Ladies European Tour events range from kind of 6,300 to 6,400 yards. And so if there are any dog legs, Lynn Grant is going to be able to cut a lot of corners. You know, her short game is just brilliant, and she's just got nerves of steel. So yeah, they're just a few players for me that really stand out. Lynn Grant is definitely the obvious one, like I said, but Olivia Cowan, Tita Green, she's pretty solid as well.
There you go. Good to hear. And just having a quick look there, not that it's a tip, but you still get a 80-1 Olivia Cowan in some places, which is very nice. So, Ben, let's have a look at your second selection, see if any of those names mentioned feature.
So, yeah, for me, one of the important things, obviously, we're approaching this with a sort of level-headed betting head-on, if that's the right phrase. Lynn Grant's performance was absolutely outstanding. I think you could say it was the performance of the year on the DP World Tour in terms of a win. It's certainly the widest margin. If you look behind her, and almost what makes it all the more incredible is that everybody in the places and throughout the top 10 was from the DP World Tour. It was a pretty similar situation. Alice Hewson was the one contender from the Ladies European Tour the year before. And ultimately, it's a sort of weights and measures game. It comes down to how the courses are set up and the difference in yardage. And they are expanding that this year. Whether they've expanded it enough to make it what we'd all want, which is, you know, the top 10 of five from each tour, so we can see final group, penultimate group with a player from each tour. It'd be a fantastic spectacle. I don't necessarily think we're there yet. I think we might be a couple of years down the line from that. So that's why I focus on the DP World Tour players from the LET. I think, obviously, Caroline Hedwall bounced back to form last week, played really well in Helsingborg, won at the back end of last year when she found a bit of form, and she contended for this a couple of years ago. So that's quite a nice experience to have in the locker. A massive price. You've got Lisa Pettersson, who I think used to be a member here. She's got a great record in Sweden. She won in Sweden last week. She was second in Sweden last year. She's a young player who might have potential, and she's a massive price. So there'd be a couple you could maybe look at. But for my final selection, I'm going with Andy Sullivan. Ince actually spoke to him. I was watching the interview yesterday, I think at the KLM Open. Ince looked like he was sort of telling you he was close to winning. Was that the impression you got, or was it maybe a couple of steps behind that schedule, would you say?
I don't think he's far away at all. The only thing for me that really stands out is he's capable of going low and, you know, kind of shooting in that kind of mid to higher 60s. But for me, it just doesn't look like he can get all four rounds together. And so that's the kind of standout factor for me. It's great shooting 67 twice in a tournament round of golf, but you can't throw in a 76 in there either. It's a 10-shot swing. So, you know, I do think tee to green, I mean, he's solid. And on the green, he's typically quite good as well. So I think Andy Sullivan's very close to playing some very, very good golf. For me, the biggest standout, like I said, is actually putting all four rounds together.
That's definitely the worry. He's had so many lightning starts. I mean, if you've been backing him in the first round leader market lately, you've been making plenty of money. And he does need to put it all together. I thought last week he was quite an eye catcher, similar reasons to Tom and Joost Luiten, to play well at a course where you don't usually play well or wouldn't typically be suited to. Sully finished 39th. I think some people would look at that and say, well, he didn't really play well, but he had a shocking week on the greens. That club so often has been his strength down the years. I would expect it to return to something a good deal more effective this week. And if it does, you combine that with a 1,000-yard shorter golf course, because he's never been the longest hitter. His approach play was really, really good in the KLM Open. I think he ranked 8th. He didn't quite do as well in that department at Green Eagle, but it's a very penal course where you can lose a lot of strokes with one or two bad shots. Essentially, I think that department of his game is where he needs it to be. And for a player of his class, I thought he was a really big price around a golf course that I just think will suit him a lot more. It's a very similar case to the case for Joost, to be honest with you. And I'm very hopeful that he can kick on after one of those good starts. Because as I say, and as Ince said, low rounds have not been the problem. It's been finding four of them, but maybe this is the week that turns.
Yeah, Andy Sullivan is still 66-1 in some places. And yeah, it was 1.5 points each way allocated from Ben on the fast starting Englishman. Tom, what about your second and final outright selection for this event?
Yeah, just a word maybe on just some of the leading ladies as well. I thought Madeline Sagstrom was interesting as well. Like, she's been playing really, really well on the LPGA, 17th, 10th and 13th, the last three starts. And we often see, especially when players come from the PGA Tour to the DP World Tour, that their form kind of, if they're playing pretty well, like Ben said earlier with Alex Noren, like, you see the form, if they put something together on the PGA Tour, they sometimes come back on the DP World Tour and play really, really well, but they feel comfortable. So I think she could do really well there. And just on Olivia Cowan, I think it's like a real benefit to have played this event a couple of times before, or at least once. Like, I think it could take some getting used to, and I don't pretend to be a golf psychologist who knows whether it makes any difference, but I think just having played it and maybe not being overawed by the occasion, which could be really big with a bigger prize purse and, you know, a lot of history like Lynn Grant last year, I think that could be a benefit. So just a couple of words on those two players there. But for me, it was Matthew Baldwin, and this kind of ties into the other course that Sven Tumba designed. And to me, we talked about Lynn Grant having one of the dominating performances last year, but Matthew Baldwin won by 7 strokes earlier this season. And to me, I just think that the way he was in that event after someone that spent so many years not winning, I thought was really, really eye-catching. And the fact he's been 32nd, 26th, 21st and 52nd since, I thought was really, really impressive, considering when people get these wins after so long without getting one, I think it's really impressive to carry on the form. And actually, when you look at the 52nd last week, he was fifth going into the weekend. And you might worry that you shot 80-75 over the weekend, and I absolutely understand that. But this isn't Green Eagle, where you're going to get caught out like you can there. There's a lot of water there and a lot longer course. So I think that, and the fact that he's just been playing so well, I sort of thought he was a good price. And then leaning into that kind of dormy open thing that I mentioned earlier with the correlating course, potentially, he's been 12th and 18th there when he probably wasn't in the form that he's in right now. So to me, everything kind of points towards another good week for Matthew Baldwin. I think, again, just going back to that kind of shorter course psychology that, again, I don't pretend to be a goal psychologist, but I think when kind of like the Andy Sullivans and the Joost Luitens don't have the pressure of hitting long drivers every time and are not forced to, I feel like everything else might, maybe Insi can give some insight on this, maybe everything else becomes a little bit easier, like the putting becomes a little bit easier because you're not under pressure for the first and second shots of a hole. So to me, maybe just trying to justify some selections there, but I think that could be a way forward.
No, absolutely. I mean, there is definitely a trend with these four picks. Again, not the longest, but incredibly accurate looking at the stats and around the green, strokes gained huge. And it was, of course, the SDC Championship in March, yeah, that seven-shot win. So he is 100-1 and good for a point each way. And staying with you, Tom, for the special bet this week, we are going to look at the top nationalities markets in both events. Ben will look at the RBC Canadian Open, but in Sweden, there's a top Dane that you like.
Yeah, so for me, it was John Axelsson, who Ben will be very fond of, given he gave him a great run recently at the KLM Open. And that was, you know, great chance to pick him up there. And I may be two or three weeks too late on this, but I was just, again, really impressed with how he's carried on that form. So 38th, 12th and 6th over those three starts. And I didn't quite get there in the each way market because there has been such a dramatic drop in odds, which I think there should be. Like, I think he's been readjusted to the right prices, right? And I absolutely understand why people would carry on backing him. But I just think being able to take on the top Dane market with him, with maybe some question marks with Hedda Kilder and people like that at the moment, Norgard Möller, as Ben mentioned, maybe not the most suitable golf course. I just felt leaning into Axelsson, who could play the sort of course and take advantage, for me was the kind of standout reason to bet him there.
Lovely. Yeah, he is 7-2 for top Dane there and good for 2 points. We'll find out Ben's top 20 on the other side of the Atlantic in Canada afterwards. So that is the pretty extensive preview of the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mix. And now it's time for a quick breather for everyone's favourite game of Who Am I? Yes, that's right. It's time for another game of Who Am I? You should know how it works by now. I picked a name from the whole field in the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mixed event this week. And I'm going to read out some obscure facts, getting a little less obscure as we go. And whoever guesses the player first wins. On his last appearance, Ben did get it in second go. So he's going to try to beat that. As Kit did last time, first go with Richard Mansell after the first clue. So I've had to make these a bit harder. And here we go. So clue one, I have earned just under 6 million euros on the tour in my career. That's all you're getting. I'm not giving you starts. Have we got any guesses at all? Good. I like no one's even putting their reputation on the line.
No.
I'll go Mike Lorenzo Vera.
It is not Mike Lorenzo Vera, thank goodness. Okay. We'll go with clue two. I shot a 58 in 2020 on my home course to beat my own record. He had the course record. He beat it in 2020 with a 58. No, no one's got it. I'm happy to move on. No one's jumping out. Okay. If I wasn't a professional golfer, I could have been a professional cricketer playing for the England juniors with Sir Alastair Cook.
Come on, Tom. Cricket.
This is the desired effect. Ben?
No, forget the it. Hand there. This is rubbish. It was better when it was easier, Ollie. You've ruined it for everybody.
I'm enjoying this. Okay, here we go. I might give you the events if we don't get it, but I'm a two-time winner on the tour.
Are we allowed to ask for clues?
These are the clues, sadly. I'm a two-time winner on the tour.
Two-time winner is from England in their mid-30s. You would think possibly from the south of England if they play with Alastair Cook.
I just want to get to clue five because I'm so happy with it. So we're going to get there. It's the final one. My namesake, same name, sung a duet with Nelly Furtado, Broken Strings. Very famous.
James Morrison! Come on! Yes! That was so obvious, everyone!
Ben wants the win.
I need to take five clues.
Would you have got it? Madeira 2010 and Spain 2015?
I would have got it with those, but that doesn't matter. Clearly, pathetic
that
effort
was
on my
painful.
Part.
When did he shoot 58, though?
St. George's Hill in 2020.
It was in the pandemic, wasn't it? It was during the pandemic, yeah. Oh,
he just doesn't strike me as a cricketer. That's what threw me off.
That was it. God, he's from the south of England, and he's in his mid-30s. So, yeah, we got the pieces of the puzzle.
I love
what
Jimbo.
What don't see is that Nelly Furtado knowledge was always going to come in handy on this podcast, and more fool me for not researching properly.
Well, it's one of my go-to karaoke duets with Nelly. So, yeah, there you go.
What a great game that was. And if you enjoy games and you don't fancy betting, then please do head over to the DP World Tour website and play our fantasy game. You can build your team with six players and compete against your friends every week.
Yep, time now to head to Oakdale Golf and Country Club in Toronto for the RBC Canadian Open. Like Ulna Golf and Country Club, Oakdale is a new venue for the players. It's 7,264-yard par 72. From what we can see, it's a tree-lined parkland course with some very tricky approaches into upturned greens and some very challenging and deep rough. Rory McIlroy defends his title this week and is going for the three-peat, having won the last two editions in 2019 and 2022. So, Incy, to you first. Rory obviously arrives this week as big favourite in tremendous form in this tournament, but not such good form currently since the Masters. He obviously was there or thereabouts last week and has been a few times, but again, the four sort of rounds, string them together, has alluded to him, and he has alluded him. And in the aftermath, he's spoken about having some struggles mentally. Where do you feel his game is right now going into this week?
I think Rory being Rory, I think his game is never far off being very good, but this game is, you know, in between the years. It's such a mental challenge. And I think, you know, he has such a responsibility in kind of being the golden child for the PGA Tour. And I think there's been a lot of pressure on him, and I think maybe even just a bit distracted, to be honest. But I think last week was a great opportunity to make history with Tom McGibbon winning. And they were both on 6 under par before going into the final round. And I really thought that might bring the best out of Rory. So I was quite disappointed to see that he shot over par. But yeah, I think when a player is going through some mental struggles, not only is it physically draining, it's also mentally, emotionally draining. And this game is, like I said, everything in between the years. So yeah, I think it's just been a huge distraction and essentially not bringing out the best kind of best elements of the Rory McIlroy that we know.
Yeah, that's right. He has struggled, but hopefully brings it back together and he leads the market, which we'll get to in a minute. But Tom, I gave this to Ben last time, and once again, new course, not much to go to in terms of stats. What have you managed to glean from your research for the type of players you'll be looking at and targeting this week?
Yeah, so for me, again, I think it's another chance for the kind of shorter hitters. It's not as dramatic as what we've got in Europe, but I do think that positional play is going to be important. And I think it's not going to be too dissimilar to St. George's last year. I think the score will get deeper, but I don't think there's going to be too much difference to it. We'll soon find out. It's very difficult in a week one of seeing it. But to me, that's kind of what I aimed at. People that have played Canadian Opens well in the past, people that particularly played well last season. And I just kind of looked at those places where short irons and wedges would have come in into play an awful lot. So to me, again, another opportunity for people to not have to worry about bombing driver off the tee every hole. There's certainly going to be opportunities where you need to do it. But this is it's one of those unique places where actually something like 75 to 100 yards could come into play, whether that's on a, you know, drivable par four, trying to get up and down, or not quite a drivable par four, or like in the par fives with playing them as a three shotter. So to me, there could be some factors into that, and maybe that will lean into our selections.
There we go. We may not know loads about the course, but we know a fair bit about the event, Ben, and it's always so well supported for the Canadians who are really after a winner. I think I read it was no Canadians won it since Pat Fletcher in 1954, and no Canadian-born golfer has won it since Carl Kefer in 1914. So they've been made to wait a little while. But coming into this week, they've obviously got Corey Connors leading, Adam Svensson, Mackenzie Hughes. They've all had wins this year, and Connors obviously went pretty close in the PGA Championship. And he's looking increasingly comfortable at this level. What do you make of his chances, as well as a few other Canadians in the event this week?
Yeah, I'd say in general, this is a better chance than has been the case for a few years in terms of getting a Canadian to win. I think we have to remember, you know, that there have not been that many outstanding Canadian golfers over the last century. You know, I mean, Stephen Ames, Mike Weir, obviously the latter very much the best of them. We do have a nice wave of good Canadian golfers now on the tour, but typically you're talking five or six very good players from Canada on a PGA Tour of 200 plus players. Then, you know, it's no surprise that they've not necessarily been quite up to it. I do think some of them have raised their game. Others have struggled. I mean, Connors' record in this is really, really poor up until a brilliant final round last year. And maybe that will be the turning point for him in terms of his performances in the event. But historically, what we have to remember, it might not be the best field, but this is still a prestigious title. It's one of the oldest events on the PGA Tour. It's a national open. They always carry a little bit extra weight. And I think that's reflected in who's won here. Jason Day, Rory obviously twice, Dustin Johnson. Last year's event, McIlroy, Finau and Thomas down the stretch was one of the best finishes of the season. And again, the field wasn't that deep last year. It's probably a little bit better than this year, but we've got enough good players here to get something similar. And I think there's a very good chance that the winner is high in the betting. The difficulty is when we go to a new golf course, when we've got the US Open next week, do you want to be wading in at short prices? That's the difficulty for me. And it's not an easy thing to assess. But yeah, it'll be a great tournament because it always is. It'll be enthusiastically supported. And come Sunday, I'm sure we'll get a real treat. And the golf course is a part of that because it looks a cracker.
Oh, Ben, you're reading my mind. My next question was for you, Incy, there. And I mean, we've got to look at the US Open just a week away. What do you think is the mindset for these top names at the market there? Is it sort of a tune-up week and, you know, winning's a bonus, or is it a massive chance to win a national open, which is pretty prestigious, you know, as Ben's alluded to?
I think it massively depends on the type of player you are. I think if you're one of the kind of more up-and-coming players, you need to get as many reps as possible. And, you know, another round of golf is another opportunity to try and gain some stats and understand where your game's at. And then, you know, you can work with your team to try and work on it in prep for a major championship. So I think it depends on the type of player you are. Whereas if you're one of these players where you have a huge responsibility in the game, you know, take a Rory McIlroy, for instance, you can definitely pick and choose in the events that you play. Obviously, he's teeing up this week. But I think he's one of the players this time around where he does need the reps. But yeah, it just depends on the type of angle you want to take it to. I just think a round of golf is always a great opportunity to learn a little bit more about yourself. But also it's an opportunity to instill the things that you're working on, whether it's kind of mental traits or anything in your swing, in preparation for what will be a massive week. And I also just do want to kind of throw this one out there, kind of going back to the event this week with two A's. Can I play my own game? Can you guess the two players beginning with A from the DP World Tour that I'm going to talk about? One's Canadian and one has won three times this year so far.
Aaron Cockerill.
Yeah.
And so Adrian Meronk.
There we go. See, my clues are way too easy, but
Ollie's sacked. This we'll play Incy's game next time.
Incy's off my job. Yeah.
I just think looking at Aaron Cockerill, yes, he's not one of the strongest players out there, but in Japan he nearly won the event. Obviously Lucas Herbert took the title, but he finished second there, and ever since he's really sprung on and playing some of his best golf, finishing 21st, 16th and 10th. So I think he's gained a lot of confidence from that experience, and he really thought that was his week. And you look at Adrian Meronk, he's currently ranked 48th in the world rankings, but his best is 45th, so he's not far off playing some of his best golf. And I think at the KLM Open he made a double bogey quite early on, and I think if not once, maybe twice, but he was still right at the top with the best players in the field. So, you know, I think recently at the, what event did he play in the States? When Brooks won the PGA Championship, that's what I'm thinking of. I don't know if you guys know this, but he made one more birdie than Brooks Koepka did. So, and that's the guy that won the championship, obviously. So I really think Adrian Bronk is playing some of his best golf, and he's been the most enjoyable character to watch throughout in the kind of last 2 years, obviously making history, being the first pole to do pretty much everything. I just feel as though his game is trending in such a nice way. Everything's felt so progressive. I would love to see him win a PGA Tour event as well. So they're my kind of my bias picks, predominantly obviously working on the DP World Tour, that kind of stand out for me too.
He's the National Open hero as well, isn't he? He's won the Irish, yeah, the Australian and the Italian. So Canada next, maybe.
Definitely an international flair at this event. So I feel like there's certainly a chance for a European to come over here and play well. So for someone, I think we've seen with Adrian Ronk and Ryan Fox this season, both of them on the PGA Tour, just been really impressive, really solid, and seems to be fitting in quite nicely. So I think they're two great. I mean, Aaron Cocker as well, just playing really well. So really two interesting shouts there from Minty.
Yeah, speaking of Europeans playing well, if we have a look at the top of the market, fascinating. I don't know when this would have happened last time. It's Rory at 5-1, Tyrrell at 12-1, and Fitzpatrick at 14-1 are the three leaders before we get on to the likes of Sam Burns, Corey Connors, as mentioned himself, a few others. Ben, Incy touched on the mental state there of Rory. What are you sort of making of him so far this season on the course, particularly, you know, getting himself into contention and then seeming not to quite get the job done?
Well, as Incy said, where Rory McIlroy is concerned, it's not usually a lot wrong. And I think, you know, I'm an unashamed Rory McIlroy fanboy here, right? So you're never going to get particularly critical assessment of his game. But I think actually the thing that tells you how great a player Rory McIlroy has been and remains is that for Rory McIlroy, crisis is top 10 in the USPGA and not winning when he hit the front in the Memorial, right? I mean, anybody else comes in with that form, it's like, oh, he's playing well. Yeah, he had a good chance this week. With Rory, it's like, oh, no, he's not where he needs to be. And it's right. That's what you do when you are a brilliant player. You set the bar so high that if you don't hit that level, then yeah, we criticize him, and rightly so. And he has not been at his best this year. And we've had players like Rahm, Scheffler, Hovland, Koepka have won big tournaments. Rory won the Dubai Desert Classic at the very start of the year, but since then has not been able to get across the line. He's had good chances at Bay Hill in particular, and obviously was in the mix of the PGA. So no doubt he's not been quite at his best. Rory often wins when he's not quite at his best. So many of his career wins are a bit of a bounce back, a bit of a, you doubted me. You think after Port Rush and he went and won the FedEx Cup. You think after St. Andrews and he went and won the FedEx Cup again. When he won Bay Hill, he missed the cut the week before, I think, at the Valspar. And he just does it. He proves people wrong all the time. This week he's 5-1, right? So I'll let him win and I'll be fine with it if he wins. But I don't think he's a million miles away. And if people think he is, then that's probably a good thing for his chances both this week and next.
Yeah, it is amazing that he keeps competing and, you know, getting top tens when he's not at his best. So when he is really on, it all comes together. It's pretty remarkable. And he is 5-1. A couple of names really excited me just going down the list was Sam Bennett, who obviously we saw at the Masters, but also a real Scandinavian theme, Ludvig Åberg, who it's his first start. And he has been smashed from about 150-1. And then everyone realized this boy can golf, top amateur in the world. He's into 66-1. So if a Swede can win during the Scandinavian Open on the other side, that would be remarkable, especially, you know, probably going off the vibes of Rose Zhang, who got it done at her first start, which was quite something last week. So let's get into those picks and see if any names do pop up. And this time we'll start with you, Tom. Who have you got as your headline pick for the RBC Canadian Open?
Yes, Ben mentioned the kind of taking a caution at the top of the market, especially a week before a major and things like that. But I've actually gone with Tyrrell Hatton. And it's a little bit because I didn't particularly love the middle range of the odds board. So it was kind of either take one of the favourites and play a couple of long shots, or it was a case of spreading them out. And I couldn't kind of find those 40-50-1 players. I looked at Matt Kuchar, but in the end couldn't get there. And when you look at Tyrrell Hatton, he's third in strokes gained total on the PGA Tour this season. He's averaging over 2 shots gained. He's behind just Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm. There's only been 3 players that have averaged that kind of statistic over the last 5 years, and that's Rory, Jon Rahm, and Dustin Johnson. So to me, I mean, he's not going to sustain that, I don't think, for the rest of the season. But if he can get a win while he's in that kind of form, I think it's time to jump on board. It's someone that continually plays before a major. I think he benefits from that. And it's quite often, it's critical people think about like Canadian Opens and it used to be like the Houston Open. Like you make all these birdies a week before a major and it wouldn't really set up in the same way like a Masters or US Open would. But sometimes you just want that feel-good factor. And I think both Rory and Hatton will benefit from that if they can get it this week. So to me, for someone that has, he's only missed two cuts since he missed the cut here last year. I really think that Tyrrell Hatton's on top of his game. He's 7th in strokes gained tee to green, 11th in strokes gained putting, 18th in strokes gained approach. And his worst strokes gained number is 59th, which is around the green this season. If he needs his around the green game this week, he's not going to win anyway. So I'm going to lean into the fact that his approaches and tee screen game are going to be brilliant and he can certainly get hot with a putter. So it will take a bounce back from the missed cut last year, but I certainly think that Hatton's playing plenty well enough to win this event and crown off what's been an incredible season for him.
Yeah, his form is remarkable, not being outside the top 19 in his last five starts. He is 12-1 and 3 points each way from you there, Tom. And it was a really interesting market. I think I had 9 players from between 14-1 and 25-1, which is pretty unheard of in the betting side of things when you look outside Rory. So, Ben, what about your headline pick? Do we see someone there or a bit bigger odds?
I was very close with Hatton, and I think for me at the top of the market is kind of him or Shane Lowry. Shane always plays well in the Canadian Open, probably doesn't win as often as we'd like to be taking 18-20-1, but when he wins big, and I think this does count. I think in the players' minds, regardless of the strength of field, okay, it's not one of these designated events, but in players' minds, winning the Canadian Open is a big thing. And therefore I could definitely see him going well. I think him and Hatton are the two to focus on at the very front. But I'll go further down to Mackenzie Hughes now, slightly obvious in some regard because he is Canadian, but he's one of the players who's really raised his game in this event. And I think that's important. I think for some of them, it's been a little bit too much. But Mackenzie's last four appearances in this, his worst is 32nd. He's been 8th, 14th and 28th since then. He's not always arrived in good form because he is a very fluctuating golfer. He's not the most consistent. He does arrive with a win this season. And the problem is his form book doesn't look very good. I think he's missed 3 of his last 4 cuts. Last week, it was by one shot. His approach play was as good as it's been for a long time. He just didn't putt well. Now, Mackenzie Hughes is one we'd probably always be happy to go into battle with in terms of the putter. He's driving it generally quite well, which has sometimes been his weakness. And he's from nearby. He's born an hour down the road. And when they played the Canadian Open at his home course in Hamilton in 2019, he was in the mix all week. He just faded a little bit on Sunday. So this is Canada's a big country. This is a genuine home game for him. He will have a lot of support, just like all the Canadian players. And whereas I felt Corey Connors, for instance, is a little bit short. Mackenzie Hughes, I thought, was the opposite. I thought it was a really big price considering his proven class. Same number of wins as Corey Connors, of course. And crucially, the fact that he's been right in the mix for this 3 or 4 times now. And that's going to serve him really well.
Yeah, great. Yeah, Mackenzie Hughes is 80-1 and 1 point each way there. And still 8 places available for some. And when he is in contention, as you say, a bit of horse for courses, it's been good. He's missed 4 cuts of his last 7, but the made cuts are 8th, 14th and 29th. So some pretty promising numbers there if he likes the course. And finally, let's get on to your second outrights and final ones for this. So Tom, kick us off. Who's joining Tyrrell?
Yeah, so for me, it's Michael Kim. And this is a player that I think had an amateur career that some people forget about quite quickly because of the struggles he's had over 2019, 2020. Like, he was a Haskins Award winner. That's always correlated really well to success on the PGA Tour. And to me, he seems almost 100% back to his best. And we still don't quite know what that is because he's flashed a couple of times, mainly when he won at the John Deere Classic. And it was that win at the John Deere Classic that really kind of led me to believe that he could go well in, here as well. So in 2018, he won the John Deere Classic by 8 shots at 27 under par. I think there's going to be a similar winning score this week, maybe 24, 25 under. And I don't expect he'll win by 8 shots around in Canada with Rory and Tyrrell Hatton in the field. But I certainly think that he can contend. And when you look at kind of the finishes that he's had over the years, like 3rd and 6th at Silverado and Colonial, which are both kind of the shorter golf courses that he likes. There was some correlation with Quail Hollow, strangely, last year in Canada, where he's 7th there 3 starts ago. And ultimately, look, he's made 8 out of 9 cuts. He's had 3 top 7 finishes in that time. You had an 11th place finish at Pebble Beach and a birdie fest there at times. So to me, I think he's going to go down to like a 20-1, 25-1 in some of these weaker fields when we eventually get them. I'd rather take him at the 80-1 or whatever he is available now in this kind of field, and hope that he can hit the front as he has done in the past on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, there you go. You're right, 80-1, 1 point each way, and again, eight places. And there's a bit of a theme on both sides. A bit of scrambling and putting is at a premium for both of you looking at their facts. Michael Kim also, good follow on Twitter. Very vocal, always. So
I always think that when they get more vocal on Twitter and Instagram, they're playing well, because I feel like they kind of withdraw themselves when they're not. So you see it with Eddie Pepperell, where he gets a little bit more vocal on Twitter once he's playing well again. So yeah, definitely a good sign for Michael Kim.
All right, I'm going to try that as well for the monthly medal. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, great. And then, Ben, round off, please, with your second outright pick.
Yeah, a really, really big price. I'm going to go with Doc Redman. If you look down his career best performances, I think almost all of them point towards this sort of golf course being suitable. His sort of breakthrough came in the Rocket Mortgage Classic when he was second. That's in Detroit. You know, we're not all that far. It was same agronomy, that sort of thing. He's been third in the Wyndham Championship, an old school Donald Ross design course with raised greens that slope from back to front. We'll see a lot of that here. Third at Silverado, Tom's mentioned that. 11th at the Travelers. He's played well at the Heritage, Sawgrass, Wells Fargo, the Valspar, tree-lined classical golf courses, because he's a bit of an old school golfer. He shapes the ball. He's not the biggest. I really do think this sort of golf course suits him. He has a bit of experience in Canada, so around the time that he was runner-up in Detroit, he played, I think, four times on the Canadian Tour, including second place in one of those. And when last we saw him, he shot a couple of 65s and was the best iron player in the field in the Byron Nelson. Because of his status, he's not getting starts in events like Colonial or last week, the designated event, so he's had to be patient. He was in qualifying on Monday for the US Open, only just missed out in North Carolina, close to home. That's probably not ideal in terms of he's now got to travel up, and this is a golf course that maybe those who are already there and getting the nuances down may have some sort of advantage. But look, we're talking about someone at 250, 300 to one here. There's not going to be without negatives. The big negative is his short game. It can let him down, but his long game looks really, really good right now. And if you've got someone who I would say will love the course, who's got their long game where they need it to be, then at the price, I'm always happy to chance that the putts drop.
Great. There you go, Dr. Redman. Yeah, 300-1 still, and a full point each way there from Ben. As you say, yeah, some of the short game laying down, but inside 100, which was mentioned, could be important. Very, very good, actually. So leave himself his favourite yardage, and it could be some very nice odds. And just staying with you, Ben, we had Top Dane market earlier for the Volvo Car Scandinavian Open. You've got a top Canadian to throw in here for your special and the cross double.
Yeah, and it's Mackenzie Hughes, as you'd expect, given that I've selected him as my main outright pick. But in terms of this market specifically, there is a strong Canadian challenge, and any one of five or six could definitely win it. You know, Hadwin, Nick Taylor, Adam Svensson, Taylor Pendrith, maybe. Plenty of very good players. But as I said, Hughes has raised his game in this tournament, and that's key. The other thing is that Corey Connors is a short price favourite. He deserves to be. You know, we thought he might become a major champion a couple of weeks ago. He's won this year. He's a very, very high class, solid player. But you look down at his record in the Canadian Open, and it is awful. Until the final round last year, when he burst through the field for a top 10 from way off the pace, he almost missed the cut again. Now, that could be the turning point. It might just be the thing that lights him up and he goes and wins this week, but he arrives on a missed cut as well. I just think he's there to be taken on. And he shapes this market. He makes every other player's odds pretty generous. So as far as Mackenzie Hughes goes, I'll top up with a bet on top Canadian, which he's been in the mix for each of the last 4 years in this event.
Yeah, great. And that's 17-2 and also 2 points. And we'll put the 1 point on the double, which is 42-1 for that one. So, well, thank you, team. That was a brilliant look ahead at this week's event. And before we say goodbye, let's just have a quick recap of all those selections.
Starting in Sweden, and Ben Coley selected Alex Norén at 14-1 for 4 points each way, and Andy Sullivan at 66-1 for 1.5 points each way. Tom Jacobs followed that with Joost Lauten at 30-1 for 2 points each way, and Matthew Baldwin 100-1 and 1 point each way there. with the special bet of John Axelsson, top Dane, at 7-2 for 2 points for Tom Jacobs. And then in Canada, Tom Jacobs has gone with Tyrrell Hatton at 14-1, 3 points each way, and Michael Kim at 80-1, 1 point each way. Ben Coley elected for Mackenzie Hughes at 80-1, also 1 point each way, and Doc Redman at 300-1, a 1 point each way. And his top nationality is Mac Hughes. Mackenzie Hughes, the top Canadian, 17-2 for 2 points. And for the cross double, you can get 38-1 for those two, Mackenzie Hughes and John Axelsson.
Yep, that's it for this week's event. Don't forget to follow our guests on Twitter. As you know, you can find Ben at Ben Coley Golf and Tom is at Tom Jacobs 93. Incy, as this is your first appearance, can you kindly let the listeners know where they can find you on social media?
Oh, thanks, Ollie. I had an absolutely brilliant time. My handle is Incy Golf, my name and my favourite sport in the whole entire world. Easy to remember.
This is why we've got you on. Everyone, apart from Tom Zeronier, it's something and golf, which is great.
I think I've missed a trick. There is someone I'm pretty sure out there that's called Tom Jacobs Golf or Tom Golf or something like that. There must be a reason.
Has Ollie booked the wrong guest? You've got the wrong guest. This fellow knows nothing about golf.
Yeah, there's a little bit fraudulent in there. Yeah, no, there's someone out there that took the handle I wanted. Maybe he's relinquished it now. But yeah, I'll stick to aging myself every week.
Love it. Tom Jacobs Golf 93 might be up for grabs soon.
Big thanks to all our guests this week and a great debut for Incy. Congratulations again on the Who Am I win and looking forward to seeing you on our screens during the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mixed.
That was a very comprehensive preview. Good luck with all of your bets and remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. We will be back next week as we look ahead to the third major of the year, the US Open, where Matt Fitzpatrick defends his title. Enjoy the golf and see you next time on The Tips.